A boiling brand brings BMWs back into title contention. This is the Brands Hatch Indy Review.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. We are back once again to bring you the review of Brands Hatch Indy. We were there and it was rather warm, wasn't it?
It was indeed. It made for excellent weather for me reading my book in the hour lapses between races and whatnot, so that was good. Touring car racing was good. A little bit of sport racing was good. We discussed it on the preview. There's too much to get through here on the review. All I will say is that, yeah, reduced schedules make for less exciting racing. I think that can be agreed across the board, I think. I know you enjoyed the caterings more than I did, but we're not going to see them again. So
no, I know.
Complete waste of everyone's time in many ways.
As we've already said before, I think if we had the Toki Juniors there, then it would have filled the programme up quite nicely. We'll get into all the action from the weekend, though, because there was certainly plenty that went on, certainly in race two and three, which we'll get on to.
In the touring cars, if this was a Porsche sprint review podcast, we might be done already, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't last long, would it? We'll get straight into qualifying on Saturday.
Yep, so on qualifying, we're not going to do a great deal on this season, because whilst the format is very exciting, there's only so much you can say about reading out who went fast when, so we'll give you the highlights and who got pole, but other than that, we're not going to spend a great deal of time on it. So without me spending any more time on why we're not spending time on it, Sam.
Yeah, some big names went out early this weekend, and I don't know whether that was because of the, obviously, adaption in boost for this weekend with the championship order coming into effect, but big names like Cook, Sutton, Sheddon, Chilton all seemed to struggle and went out in that first session in each group, sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I will say Sheddon was out qualified by Halstead, who hadn't turned a wheel before this weekend, and Hamilton, who are, with no disrespect to those drivers, not two drivers you'd be expecting a three-time champion to be qualifying behind.
Yes, Moffat also went out early on, but for different reasons this time round. He had a slight incident at Paddock Hill and beached himself in the gravel, causing a red flag. But then, having got out of the gravel, he then missed going to the weighbridge on the way back to the pits, and I think had all of his times deleted. Which really doesn't help when you're trying to set a time to get up the grid. It was Osborne's best ever qualifying, up in seventh overall, which is a really good effort from him. Obviously a home circuit for the team, so they were looking to impress.
Was it Moffat who missed the weighbridge? What was Ingram? Was it both of it?
No, I believe it was Moffat.
No, it was Ingram. You got it wrong, yeah.
Okay.
It was because Ingram had to go out at the end of the first session with 3 minutes to spare to set a lap.
Sorry, I'd heard more.
No. So Ingram came in, missed the red, because it was a red flag. He missed that. He was called to the weighbridge and went straight to the pit. Therefore, he had all his times deleted off of him. And he was able to go back out with 3 minutes to spare and do what champions do and set a time to get through.
Do you apologise for the misinformation there?
No, I just thought I'd ask because I hadn't heard them off it. Well, I'd seen it gone off, but I hadn't realised that aspect. So,
yes.
No. So having not spent any time, we spent lots of time correcting each other now, which is grand. But yes, Osborne, good result for him.
Yeah, and obviously pole position for BMW, which none of us saw coming.
No, we didn't see. Well, no, I did say in the preview that this was a track that if BMW were going to get back on track, it would be here, and they did.
Yeah, and it does seem like they've been working tirelessly for the last 2 weeks, having some late nights and trying to sort out those gremlins and that weight distribution that they were struggling with at Donington. And we see that going into the races now.
Yep, so race one then, and the first thing that stood out to me was that the BMW boost off the line is back, having been sort of fairly non-existent at Donington. Hill off the line here went, to borrow a phrase from David Addison, like a stabbed rat, not like I've ever seen a rat be stabbed.
Can I just clarify, on the soft tyre?
Yeah.
On the hard tyre, it was a slightly different story, but certainly on that soft tyre, in those weather conditions, they had it hooked up.
I've got discussions for tyres later, don't you worry about that. It hailed off the line very, very quickly indeed. Ingram went around the outside for third, which is just what Ingram does, isn't it? Just exciting overtakes early on in the race. Good move.
Smiley was the highest driver starting on the hard tyre in 11th. So it would be interesting to see how he was going to deal with that hard tyre. It was notable, as we realised throughout the weekend, that it was a poor tyre to be on, to say the least.
Yep.
And drivers would go on to struggle with it.
Yep. Lap four, Dan Lloyd's luck, troubles, tribulations, whatever you want to call him in the touring cars, carry on to catch up with him. He was deemed to have had a false start, so was given a 5-second penalty. And after that, to be honest with you, race one just kind of settled down from there. Not a great deal happened until Moffat dipped a wheel at Paddock. He obviously hadn't had enough of it on the Saturday, wanted to do it again, this time in front of more fans. He did manage to sort of keep himself out of the gravel this time and get back on circuit, but it cost him and Chilton time. Hamilton would then lose it himself, unaided at Clark, which forced him to pit.
Which was quite a shame, actually, because Hamilton had been running quite close to the back of the pack, as had Halstead, considering his... chucked in at the deep end into that Astra this weekend. It was pleasing to see how close Nick was to the rest
absolutely.
Of them before that unfortunate mistake.
Absolutely. And then, to be honest with you, Hill won the race, and that was basically it. I mean, it was great to see Rainford on the podium. It was obviously a really good bounce back for BMW. I was surprised that Ingram finished third, given Morgan was behind him. And obviously, the rules are that the top three have to run the hardest tyre in race two. I'm slightly surprised that Ingram didn't go, do you know what, I'll have these on softs and swap with Morgan. But I suppose Morgan, it's early in the season. Does he want to necessarily be doing that so early? Maybe not. I don't know.
From the interviews that happened after the race, I think Tom was more assuming that the hard wasn't going to be as bad as he then found out it was in race two. Because of the times that Sutton was setting in race one when the conditions were slightly cooler.
Yeah, but then you and I had TSL up on the side of the circuit and we're looking at what were... softs and hards, but in their own teams. So it's pointless comparing, you know, somebody's running at the back of the field, somebody's running at the front of it in completely different cars and setups. So we were running it with, I think it was Camish and Sutton, we were comparing, and Camish was 6 tenths quicker.
Yeah.
I think we saw that one of the Hyundais, was it Ingram was 6 tenths or thereabouts quicker than Chilton?
Smiley,
who was on the hard, you're absolutely right. Again, okay, they're not in the same team, but it's the same car.
Yep.
So we said, you know, look at that.
There was a big discrepancy between the times. And when they came to speak about it after, they said, oh, it's maybe about 3 tenths. And I was like,
no,
really?
It's not. No, not exactly. And okay, you kind of account for, well, race two is going to be the hottest of the day. All the softs last. And to be honest with you, had the safety car. I know Sutton, we'll get to them, race two, said the safety car stopped softs from going further forward. But in some ways, I think he probably elongated the life of the softs as well.
Yes.
You can argue that both ways, we'll get to. But I'm surprised that, you know, that we saw it last year. Huff deliberately dropped out the top 10 to give himself the best tyre for race two. I'm surprised that
we said this it there wasn't and done. Then that we were surprised it didn't happen.
Dare I say, I think they missed a trick, personally. Yeah. I really do. And okay, you can't foresee what's going to happen in race two and how poorly it's going to go for Ingram there. I get that. But why run the risk when you've got your teammate behind you? You can do that. You know for what the BMWs aren't going to drop out of 1-2. Take that risk.
Yeah.
I'm very surprised. The finishing order, have you got anything else on race one? Sorry.
No. My last note is not a lot really happened.
No.
It was fairly processional, which was a slight shame.
Yeah, race one was quite dull. And actually, having had quite some dull race beforehand, I sort of thought, oh, good. It's going to be a long day of racing. Things would improve. End of race one, then Hill took the win from Rainford. As I say, really great to see a debut, debutant on the podium in their first season. Really good achievement for Rainford. We both sort of earmarked him coming into the season as somebody to potentially watch.
Also, considering the difficult weekend that BMW had had last time out at Donington, you thought this could turn into quite a long season for him and Leon, as we'll get on to. But they've really shown this weekend that they could be drivers to be reckoned with. Not just this year, but going forward.
And as a stop clock is right twice a day, we were right about something with highlighting Rainford going into this season. Ingram would complete the podium, which made it his third podium in four races. Morgan fourth, Camish fifth, Dobble sixth. Good result for Dobble in the Vauxhall. De Leon seventh, Osborne eighth. So he did well to sort of stay in and around the pack for him. Lloyd, even with the 5 second penalty, was able to finish ninth overall. Sutton tenth. Struggled for pace, albeit on the harder tyre.
He struggled for pace all weekend.
He did, yes.
Which we'll get on to. But yeah, he did the best of those hard tyre runners in race one.
Yep.
But was only good enough for 10th. And even with that 5 second penalty, Lloyd was still able to finish ahead of him by about 7 tenths, I think.
Yeah, Pearson was the only Toyota driver who decided points were a good thing. I suppose maybe the other three are running under your system. Then it was Smiley. Then it was Kreese, who got his first points of the season. So well done to him. Jelly and Cook rounding out the top 15 for One Motorsport. Should we get on to race two? Because things actually happened in race two.
Quite a lot more happened in race two.
Race two is more interesting. So let's erase race one from the memory and let's go straight into race two.
Yeah, so obviously the top three would be starting on the hard tyre, but also James Dorling chose for some reason to start on the hard tyre as well.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Which is a slightly confusing one.
I don't understand why anybody would start race two on that tyre.
Out of choice.
Yeah. So surely you either get out of the way in race one and you try and make it yourself up, or you go hard in race one and two and you go soft in race one and two, and race hard and accept that you'll have to run the hard one in race three.
Yeah, as the cars pulled up to the grid, it looked like Osborne was ahead of his grid box and unfortunately was found to be as well. Yeah,
he was, but bloody hell, Tim Harvey, could he be more of a snitch? On the commentary, I mean, for goodness sake, I can't believe it.
He's Max Verstappen.
Wasn't he just Inspector Harvey out there with his magnifying glass? Sure. I mean, it's a slam dunk.
It is.
He won't be the only one that does it this season. We're seeing it. Actually, we're seeing it quite a lot at the minute.
I would say it's increasing. It's one of the more tricky circuits to do it is, because of the slope and how the grid is set up at Brands. But he's been in the championship a little while now. It's something he should have set out.
Yes and no. Top drivers get caught out of this all the time as well. And actually, Harvey was quite excited with his magnifying glass. He thought Sutton was also out of position, but obviously he wasn't. These things are a matter of fact as well. There's no bias or anything. You're either in or you're out. It's a little bit unlucky for Osborne. Same as Lloyd in race one. If you creep or you're just a little bit out, it's tough. But calm down, Tim.
Morgan in fourth, being the first car on soft tyres, unfortunately had quite a poor start. And on the contrary, De Leon had a very good start, which we kind of expected from the BMWs, having seen their start from race one as well. And then the BMWs on those hard tyres really started to have the gap closed on them on about lap three onwards. And it seemed like they were okay in those opening laps, and the soft tyres, once they got to their right working temperature on all the other cars, they were right up behind them.
Yeah, in the early stages, well, Dan Lloyd was sideways coming out of Graham Hill Bend. I do feel for Lloyd because he is a quick driver, but he doesn't have to get involved in, whether his fault or not, skirmishes, doesn't he?
Yes.
In a way that, particularly this season already, Smiley isn't, which I think I'm not saying it's anything fault from Lloyd, but it's interesting that you've got a team that's got two quick cars, two decent drivers, and Smiley's fortunes and Lloyd's fortunes are complete opposite ends of the scale at the moment.
It may swap halfway through the season. We never know.
It may do indeed.
Camish managed to get a really nice move on Rainford into clearways. He was starting to show really good early pace and was pushing on to challenge those BMWs early on. And then De Leon and Morgan passed Rainford at Druids on the foot following lap.
Yep.
And you could really see that differential in the tyre there. And Rainford was struggling in those early stages, wasn't he?
Yeah, as I say, the BMW struggles on harder tyres traditionally, and it always takes a couple of extra laps to get the heat into the tyres. That's made even harder on the hard compound. Slightly mitigated by hot weather conditions, but yeah, the fact of the matter is, and this is where I'm going to get my soapbox a little bit about the tyres, is that this is one of the reasons I don't like this system at all, is because each track has such a different variation. So at Donington, it made no difference at all. The podium was pretty much exactly the same, if not exactly. I think it was one driver different, wasn't it? Same guy won the race in Sutton. Didn't really make any difference whatsoever in Donington, if we're being honest.
No.
Here, it made a humongous difference.
And you could argue that, yes, there's a bigger variation in the tyres between the soft and the hard, rather than the soft and the medium.
But in that case, get rid of the medium, just run the soft and the hards then.
But there's also the variation in temperature, there's variation in track layout, there's a variation that Brands have had a big new strip of tarmac laid that gave a load of extra grip through McLaren and Clearway.
But this is why I don't like it, because the ballast, and I know people are going to start screaming at the podcast and probably even switching off, but please do stay with me. The ballast was the same weight regardless of what track you're on. Okay, some cars will carry it differently, and some tracks the ballast made more than it didn't. But I would say that at every track it made some level of difference. Unless you're Ash Sutton in the Infinity, which just seemed to be able to carry whatever weight it needed to carry. But at least with that, you the weight remained the same and you kind of reduced the variables with the tyres. It's a bit of a gamble on the day to what the temperature's doing, what the track's doing.
Do you think
I just don't like it.
They move away from not having the tyres, that there should be a bigger variation in the boost given and more of a deficit given to the top drivers from race one?
I'm not sure I like the boost either, if I'm honest with you. It's a bit gimmicky, a bit push to pass. I don't like DRS in F1 for the same reason. Though I accept with F1, with these style of cars and the widths they are, that DRS is owned, and the fact that you're not allowed to race side by side because everyone's on the wall screaming for penalties, and the rules are so unclear in F1 to when an apex is won and lost that, frankly, I get why DRS exists, because it's an easy overtake without having to have every single overtake scrutinised. In touring cars, I'm not yet sold on the bit. We're only days, but I'm not yet sold. I think that it's so powerful that it is a push to pass, which I don't really like as a system. I say, I don't I didn't overly love Ballast, but it did work. And I don't think they've ever found a solution. They've moved away from Ballast for several seasons now, but I don't think they've ever found a system that works as well as Ballast, despite how unpopular it was. And I understand why it was unpopular, because engineers generally don't like 60 kilograms being shoved in their delicately tuned cars. So, and I get it. But if you want to do this kind of thing and you want to try and level fields or make this sort of variation in racing, I'm yet to see a better way of doing it.
Okay.
Apart from my other suggestions of completely change race two and do the reverse grid there or something like that. But yeah.
On lap five, we'll get back to the racing.
Yes, yeah, I put the soapbox away. Yeah, carry on.
On lap five, Ingram lost four positions on that lap on the hard tyre. And once he got shuffled wide, drivers came through quite easily. And he was the one that struggled the most on this hard tyre in race two. I don't know whether that's because of it being front wheel drive. And the BMW seemed to handle it better because of not having everything over that front axle.
I think it also didn't help Ingram. He started the lowest down of the cars. And so he was naturally the first one that people got to.
Yep.
The BMWs had started quite well with their rocket ship starts off the line as well. And they were able to get a little bit further out front, whereas Ingram was unable to match them pace for pace early on. And obviously, by definition, he was the first car on that tyre to get to. And you know in touring cars that it just takes you to be overtaken by one car and suddenly you're shuffled because of the way... Particularly at somewhere like Brands, if you get stuck on the outside of Druid, you can lose several places at once.
Yeah, well, following that shuffling down on lap six, it seemed like everyone wanted Ingram's position. Mm-hmm. And coming onto the back straight, you had Osborne, Dobble, Lloyd, Pearson, all wanting to vacate the same piece of tarmac. And there wasn't room for all of them, was there?
No, for me, no one's at fault on this one. No. It's a case of that you can't put six cars down into one piece of tarmac. Lloyd gets bumped, Osborne gets bumped, in the end Lloyd has to take to the grass, which is unfortunate for him, and again it just sums
wrong
up
wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, but it is as simple as that, unfortunately. Yeah. It's a shame for him, but he then had to come to the pit lane to remove
scooped up a hell of a load of grass.
Yeah, he's got to remove that from his radiator and stuff, particularly on a hot day as well. It's a shame, but for me that's just classic touring car racing. That is six, seven cars going for one position, and I wouldn't change that for the world. So.
And then we had probably the most controversial incident, I would say, of race two, with Hall and Patterson into paddock.
Yeah, so
rule first, can I just say, where we were sitting, all we saw was two cars exiting paddock into the gravel and like...
Well, I only saw one because of the way, because of how much dust was kicked up. I could see one of the cars. I couldn't even see Patterson's car.
So once the dust started to settle, we saw that Hall was into the side of Patterson in the gravel, and then there was a little bit of an argy-bargy, wasn't there?
Yeah, so I've got to say, this accident, in my opinion, is all on Hall. He is to blame for this, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I don't like Dex's reaction of going over and putting his face into Max's. And obviously, Max gives him a shove back. A, your teammates.
Yeah,
B, it's really early on in the season for you to be having a falling out. You're at a team that relies very heavily on sponsors. I mean, everyone relies on sponsors, but you know what I'm saying? It's
a team that doesn't need to be dealing with two damaged cars and then...
Damaged relations off the track,
That outshowing of emotion, which obviously being in that race car at that moment is severely heightened.
Yeah, but it's not like... I understand why Patterson's annoyed, but it's not like he was leading the race in Hall's boat. In the minis, we saw Fairbrother get absolutely punted off there in his race. And it's not like they were racing for first here. And I just thought Patterson's reaction was a little bit unsavoury, shall I say. I don't like to see... Maybe I'm slightly hypocritical because we like the Neil Plato stuff, but that was because that was at the height of a rivalry. I don't like to see this between two young lads in the, sort of their rookie-ish... Certainly for Hall in a rookie season, and Patterson... For me, there's no need to go and do that. It leaves an unsavoury note in my mouth.
I have one small criticism of ITV cameras in that during the race, during the six laps behind the safety car, there was not a single replay of the actual incident. It took until just before the start of race three for actually us to see what happened, and they were two driver on boards which were shown to stewards.
But what I will say is if that's going to become a norm, that ITV are going to show us those on boards that usually only get shown in the stewards' office, that would be a fantastic addition to the sport, because
it showed two completely different stories.
Absolutely, on first watch, because they showed Hall's first, I thought, oh, hang on a minute, maybe Dex has launched this, licked a stamp and send it, when there was absolutely and a day later, a dollar short, all the stuff from Martin Brundle's playbook here, and actually maybe he had nowhere to go. You then look at the one on board from Patterson, you see he launches this very, very early. He's pretty much I hate the F1 speak, but he's claimed the corner.
Yeah.
And Hall has turned into him.
He's ahead when Hall turns in.
Yeah. And he doesn't need to turn. Hall needs to, in my opinion, come off the pace or come off the throttle there and just you know, ease off and let, or hold a much wider line so you don't hit.
My amazement is that when Hall's turned in, obviously from what I understand of racing, when you're turning in, you're looking for where the apex is. Mm. And for me, Dex is already there because he's made contact with his rear three quarter
to actually
spin him round. I almost feel like you should be able to turn out of that.
Yeah, simply put, Max hasn't seen him, has he?
No.
I think that's his on. Yeah, that's how it comes across to me, is that it's a little bit poor from Max because he's left a hell of a space on the inside anyway. So as a driver, you should really be anticipating somebody's going to be a hero. Yeah. And I don't think Patterson was being a hero here. No. I think he had every right to go for it.
It was a good, clean move.
But if you're going to leave that level of space open, you've got to assume someone's going to be a hero. And then, as you say, I don't think he's looked, and I don't think he's clocked Patterson's there. And then he's turned across him and sent them both into the gravel trap. We'll get to penalty corner at the end, like we normally do. But yeah, he would be penalised for this. But yeah, so the argy bargy afterwards, I don't like to see.
One thing I must say, at this point, Moffitt had made decent progress.
Yeah, he had actually.
From 20th all the way up to 11th. And at times looked racy and sometimes overly racy this weekend,
yes,
which we'll get on to.
Yeah.
And then the strangeness happened, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what is it about Dan Kamish and Brands Hatch? Or what is it about Dan Kamish and touring cars? I don't know, because that guy's luck. I've never seen this before.
No. So it was reported to be an ignition issue.
Yeah.
And just coming along the back straight up to McLaren, just as the safety car turned its lights off, getting ready to take the restart, Hill starts to pull away. And
as he should do.
Yeah. Hold the speed he was meant to do.
Which he did.
And Ingram, Kamish, car just cut out.
Yeah.
And that caused quite a bit of confusion behind, not knowing.
Well, yeah, because you got to remember the two cars directly behind him are rookies.
Yes.
So whose level of knowledge isn't going to be as high as some of the other drivers on the grid. And
right.
You think to yourself, okay, is he just missed Hill going?
Mm.
Is he just a bit slow on the uptake? What's going on? Why is he stopping? Why are you not moving? And then you've got a decision to make. Do you pass him, which is technically illegal?
Yeah, yeah. Because there was no sort of like physical signs of the car having broken down.
No hazard lights on or indicator or anything like that. No.
And obviously Rainford goes to one side, other drivers start to pass on the left-hand side, and then a couple of drivers are almost blindsided by it in Dobble and Moffitt.
Yeah, and I have to say, on first look, which we watched it through sort of fuzzy phone pictures, I thought, they could have done better. Having watched it back, I don't think they can miss it. It's not as bad as, but it did remind me a little bit of the Billy Monger incident especially on those onboards that car moves and something is there and what can you do? I think Dobble and Moffat got away with it in terms of how hard they hit him and how little damage they got in comparison.
Yeah, looking at the damage that there was on the back of the Ford, it broken toe link, pushed all the wheel out and broken the bumper quite significantly.
Yeah.
So much so that Kamish was only able to drag the car to the side of the road, therefore causing the safety car to come back out for another couple of laps while they recovered that one.
Yeah, as I say, I think one driver did end up getting a safety car infringement, but I think that's because I think it was Moffitt. We'll cover it in penalty corner. I can't remember off the top of my head. I need to go back and read it, but I think the order was swapped a little bit, so maybe a car got past somebody on the safety car rather than the actual passing camera, so they got past somebody else. But the difficulty there is that it's so difficult to really sort of legislate for this because you don't expect it. What I will say as well is that Hill, I thought, was exemplary because rather than pull away, because we got half a lap of racing for the safety car balls around again.
I don't think it was even that. I think by the time that they got to paddock, he'd already realised that there were yellow flags for the full circuit.
But before the start of the line, he'd slowed to let them pass, which is what he should do under this new safety car rule. But I thought that was really good of Hill because under the old rules, who cares? But I thought actually that was some really good quick thinking, whether that's himself or the engineer or whoever, because he stopped and the pack was, who then got past Kamish, was able to get back on his tail. And then, it was time to go back because obviously Hill at that point wouldn't know what's happened to Kamish.
No. So once all the safety car drama had finished, there was a proper restart to be had. And for me, it kind of felt like Hill let De Leon through at paddock.
No, I disagree.
Really?
I think De Leon's just gone for it because he's under pressure behind. I have to say, I think this new safety car restart is brilliant because it keeps the cars so close to each other. I think that Hill, I don't think he's let him through purposely. I think that De Leon's come under such pressure from Morgan and Rainford, particularly Morgan, straight off the bat, he's gone, right, I've either got to make a move here or I'm going to get swamped, and he's gone for it. And I think that when he's there, Hill doesn't make it difficult.
Mm. He doesn't do a haul and just turn into his rear quarter. He does leave quite a big gap on the inside. That's what's making he's letting him go through because he knows the tyre situation.
No, because I think because he knows how... I disagree because how close the cars are, if he lets De Leon through, he's got to expect he's going to lose lots of places. Yeah. I think Dillon was caught in cold a little bit, personally. I don't think Hill was anticipating that a teammate would try a dive bomb move. It was a good dive bomb move. I'm not criticising the move at all, but I don't think he necessarily thought that this teammate, rookie, what you're going to say, would make that kind of move straight off the safety car. That's how I've read it, but you could be right as well.
Because it very much looked to me like Rainford then tried to follow De Leon through, and then there was sort of like all three of them, including Morgan, up at Druids, trying to sort everything out.
Yes.
And to be fair, Rainford had got through, got into second, and then Hill was almost playing like defensive simulator.
I do think the Hill kind of almost sacrificed himself a little bit at that point to try and help. I think once he'd realised the line and was through, it's a case of, right, I'm gonna get mugged here.
It was how the long BMW for a couple of laps, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was, I'm gonna get mugged here. How long can I keep them back to make it as easy as for Darrell as possible to take the win? Because we saw Rainford and Hill sort of side by side for half a lap trying to keep the cars behind back, didn't we? Which was good.
On the restart lap, there was one little issue, which was where Dobble got turned around by Moffat coming out of Graham Hill, which was a little naughty, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that.
It feels as if sometimes Moffat just gets on the power and expects the car in front to keep going, and sometimes they aren't as quick out of the bends because they're not rear-wheel drive.
I will say that we didn't get any form of replay of this, so we don't really know the ins and outs of it. Obviously, if somebody brake checks, I'm not saying Dobble has, but or is slow or misses a gear, then you can get caught out that way. I don't think from memory Moffat got a penalty for that incident, which makes me think there was something else at play.
And then Hill started to fall back.
Hill started to fall back, as was Ingram as well. He was sort of tumbling down the order. I've also got here that Aaron Taylor, Smith and Kreese got a little bit silly with hip and shoulder.
McLaren. It was a bit, argy-bargy, crease up on the grass, and all a bit untidy, I'd say.
Yeah, and look, we'll get to it later on, I'm sure, but Toyota are absolutely stink at the minute, don't they? They're just...
It's not great.
It's just so bad. There's nothing there, is there? There's nothing to get excited about for a Toyota fan at the minute. And we did say with Aaron Taylor-Smith, will he go the same way as Watson? Struggle there. And actually, you start to look at it and think, okay, a lot of drivers have gone through Toyota recently, a point you've made several times in your credit. Is there a reason for that? And it's starting to look like there might be.
Yeah.
It has to be said.
Rainford then started struggling with three laps left, and again himself started to drop back through the field, I think eventually ending up seventh with Hill in eighth. And then Cook pulled a lovely double move on Pearson and Rainford to make up two places.
He did.
Which was probably the most exciting thing that happened for Cook all weekend.
Talking of excitement, Darrell Leon would come across the line to become the first driver from the Philippines to take a touring car win. I think he's probably going to be the youngest as well. I'm going to check that at some point. And that win also made it made history for WSR. They are now the most winningest team in terms of races in the British touring cars. We think that's taken the crown from 888, who would have ran the
Early Vauxhalls in the 2000s and stuff, and went all the way through to take Giovinardi to a title as well.
Yep.
A very successful team for a very long time.
But I do want to just say a massive congratulations to De Leon. We've both been a fan of his from day one, since he came in halfway through the season at the Team Hard Cooper. He's shown from the off that he's got pace, he's got promise, and he can race. And I thought he was absolutely smashing here to bring it home. You must have known as well that if laps counting down, don't drop a wheel, don't drop a wheel, don't run it wide, don't do anything stupid here. But I thought he was exemplary in his drive.
Yeah, it was a calm and composed drive. And once he was out the front, no one was catching
him. No. Brilliant from De Leon. He won the race for Morgan. Ash Sutton got through to third. It's just what Sutton does. He would say that the safety car stopped him from winning the race or having a chance winning the race. I half agree and disagree, as I said to you earlier. I think that the soft tyre was saved a little bit. Okay, whilst the hard drives were protected for a few laps, it also meant life was able to remain in the soft tyre for a few extra laps as well.
There's quite a lot of laps behind safety car, so I can understand why he's gone down that route of saying that.
Yeah, but in that case, have a word of your engineers to why the extra safety car laps were required over in only Dan's garage, side of the garage. Smiley would finish fourth. What a weekend for Smiley, by the way, and that's a great result for him. And actually, it's really good to see him back at the sharp end of the grid. In a car that he can clearly get on with and can clearly cut it with the best of them. Moffat would finish fifth from Cook, Rainford, Hill, Rowbottom, Pearson, again scoring points for Toyota. Ingram, who fell all the way down the field, unfortunately, on that tyre. Chilton, Jelly, Kreese and Aaron Taylor-Smith rounding out the points-paying positions.
Yes.
If you're enjoying this podcast, why not leave us a 5-star review? And at the very least, make sure you're liked and subscribed to all of our content so you stay up to date with everything from the British Touring Car Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. Go and subscribe to us there. Right, back into race three then, and ball nine was picked out by Darrell himself, which meant that Rowbottom would be on pole with Hill on the front row on a soft tyre.
Yeah, that's the review. Good seeing you. We'll move on to the predictions.
I did kind of think that when Hill got pulled out on the front row with a soft tyre, he was just going to bolt.
Yeah.
But to be fair to Robo, Rainford was just behind them, Robo drove an excellent first lap, didn't he?
He did indeed. Before we get to the first lap, Patterson would start from the pit lane for this race.
Not necessarily down to the damage suffered in race two, but actually a clutch slave cylinder that didn't want to slave anymore.
That's lots of mechanical words.
Yes. That... Some listeners might understand that.
If you have an interest in basic car mechanics, why not drop us a line and Sam will explain all of this to you? You can reach us on Facebook or Instagram.
Oh, dear. But yeah, Cook also had a poor start off the line, just seemed to bog down. But yeah, Robo's defence around that first lap was the most defence I've seen him give in quite a few races.
Yeah, because Hill put him under a lot of pressure going to Paddock Hill Bend, and he held firm, which is good to see from Rowbottom. As we'll discuss a bit later, he can be a little bit...
Soft.
Yes. Yeah.
Rainford made a lovely move at Paddock, though, to eventually get past Rowbottom. And
well, you say lovely move. I would say
on the line,
on the limit of what is acceptable. And to be honest with you, he got a bit of a wishy-washy penalty for to recover in penalty corner in a moment.
It was certainly a move for the ages, and something that in 2008-09,
yeah, you wouldn't look twice at. Yeah. No, I agree. So basically, he's down the curb. I think the curb slightly unsettles the car as well.
Yes, it does.
And it just nudges Rowbottom, and like that sort of scrubs the speed off of Rowbottom, and he's able to nip through before Druids. It's one of those that, for me, that is on the limit of what touring car racing is.
Yep.
However, I also accept that some people go, well, just because it's not a hard bash, what's the difference between that and Hall? The difference is they stay on the circuit, but actually, principle's the same. I don't fully agree with that argument, but I also understand that it's allegedly a no-contact sport. You shouldn't have contact to pass, all that kind of stuff. For me, this is just about on the line of what is acceptable, I think. But I wouldn't die on that hill. And
I think the amount of curb that Rainford takes is optimistic, shall we say.
Yeah.
But they were side by side going up into Druids, and the move was completed through Druids itself.
What I am surprised about is that he didn't even consider, but look at it, giving the place back.
No.
Which I'm slightly surprised about, because you could argue he cleared the pace, let Rowbottom back through and do it again next lap in a more clean way, and then you won't be going to Stewart's afterwards, will you? But yeah, as I say, for me, it's just about on the limit of what is acceptable.
We then found out that Smiley Start would be under investigation after the race, which has caused several issues on social media. And I think because it was the final race of the day, they were more able to say that, because if any penalty is given, it's a 5-second penalty and it's added on at the end.
Yeah.
The only caveat I would have to that is drivers then don't know about it and can't try to make up the time.
But it also does depend on what the alleged breach is, because that a start line infringement can cover a variety of things, having a mechanic late on the grid to being out of position at your grid box to jumping the start. Now, the first two are a matter of fact. You can look at it very quickly. The second one, which is potentially jumping the start, requires the stewards to look at telemetry and all kinds of bits, which they can't look at until after the race. So, yeah, it doesn't help that so much can be caught under that one offence. But actually, there are nuances to that offence, which means that some of it cannot be dealt with. But take Osborne's one. He was out of position at the start. You can look at the cameras. You can spool back and go, that car is over the line. I don't need to look at anything else. I can see that he's outside his box. With a jump start or a creep start, it's not necessarily as obvious, particularly if you're further back. Sorry.
Consequently, there was no actual penalty handed out, and Smiley was in the clear for that. So at the end of it all, doesn't actually matter.
No, but I say, people do get very angry on social media, as I'm going to cover off when we do our final sort of thoughts on this.
And then Moffitt was being very punchy, shall we say.
Well, he nearly sent Sutton back to Essex with what I can only describe as an incredibly optimistic move going up towards Druids. I am a defender of Moffat on this podcast compared to you. However, this was...
He tried to get an underlap, didn't he?
Yeah, but it was never on.
No.
It was never on.
I know.
We'd seen an accident at that very part of the track in the minis beforehand, similar circumstances, where Werner got really punted into the barriers there. And Sutton, to be fair to him, does what Sutton does, buried the throttle and controlled the car out of a slide. I don't know how he does it. His reactions are incredible.
I think at that point, Moffat had obviously backed out of that.
Yeah, but
Sutton was already catching the slide. And then Moffat decided he wanted to punt him up the bottom again. At Druids.
Yeah, and then again down Graham Hill.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I would say Moffat was a bit scrappy in this race, I have to say. And the front of the BMW would bear testament to that, wouldn't it?
The front of that Beamer afterwards, that's going to be one of those at the end of the season where you see it, one of the trade stands going, oh, you can have this for 40 quid or whatever.
Yeah, look, as I say, I defend Moffat a lot on this podcast. I think some of it was a bit of frustration of clearly that he's seen that his two teammates have won the first two races.
Yep.
Hill was likely to win, BMW was likely to win the third race. And through his own errors, he wasn't able to be at that sharp end competing for those wins and podiums due to his, his own errors in qualifying, etc.
And
that doesn't excuse what happened necessarily, by the way, just to make it clear.
But
he
probably should have been there or thereabouts.
Well, exactly that, hence the frustration. But, I wasn't a massive fan of it. And then also, when Ingram got past him, it was a little bit rubbing on the back of Ingram as well. So, people will say, well, Robin's racing, that's how touring cars works. And if you're going to not be angry at Rainford's move on Robot, you can't be angry on this. Slightly different, I'd say. But to a degree, Robin is racing, and that is classic touring cars.
Yeah. Camish was up to 16th by lap 5 from the back of the grid, obviously, following the issues that he had at midway through race 2, which I thought was decent progress, although it was fairly stunted after that.
And
actually get that high up when the race finished.
No, he didn't make it into the points, I don't believe. From memory.
And then Moffat, following a further rubbing, actually was given a black and white flag on lap 8 for his indiscretions, should we say.
Well, we assume it's so because it wasn't for track limits, which likely means it's stop running into people.
On lap 11, Ingram caught and passed Smiley quite competently and confidently. Mm-hmm. And then again on lap 14, passed Robo. And there wasn't much defence, was there?
No, Hill absolutely got by Robot really easily into Paddock Hill Bend. As you say, not a great deal of defence. I will say that whilst I do think that it was a little bit too easy, the Ford really struggled this weekend across the board. Could Camish have won race 2? We'll never know, but he did have some pace going into race 2.
Yep.
But actually, Sutton struggled all weekend. Robot struggled all weekend. And aside from race 1, Osborne was pretty anonymous as well. Yep. They certainly seem to struggle getting through the packs, that has to be said. Disappointing, I read Ken from Napa. They never go particularly strongly here, it has to be said.
No, I remember they used to suffer quite a bit with punches around here as well, didn't they?
The Butcher Neat era.
Yes, exactly. Robottom also fell 3 places on lap 20 as well, really not helping this final race for the weekend.
Again,
it could have been promising. Obviously, being on that soft tyre, I kind of thought he was going to be more competitive and possibly even finish inside the top 5.
Yeah, but again, I'm not sure about the car performances that was there this weekend. As I say, Sutton achieves results because he's a freak in the nicest possible way. Yeah, he is a generational talent who always gets the maximum and more out of his car. I think it's unfair to apply the same standards to Rowbottom, to be honest with you.
Hall decided to have a little adventure coming down Paddock, didn't he, and all the way up to Druids, and decided to have a nice trip through the gravel that was consequently followed by a puncher later on that same lap, and then a difficult situation.
It's unfortunate. Now, the way it was, we didn't see it because obviously we were at the other end of the circuit. The way it was described to people in the way out was that Hall had veered across the road and blocked Hill as he tried to get in the pit. I don't think that is the case. I think Hall is trying to stay out of the way in a crippled car, and it just so happens that Hill was coming through at pace.
On the inside. Where he wanted to be.
Exactly where Hall wanted to be. Hill does well to avoid him. I don't think Hall's done a great deal wrong, personally. He's stayed out of the way as best he can. But he doesn't want to go too far, because actually if he misses the entrance to the pit, he's then got to either ditch it and cause a safety car or limp it around another hole out, which is not going to happen with punch like that.
Which is consequently what he did. He ditched the car in the gravel at the exit of Clearways, and they actually covered that under yellow flags.
I'm amazed the race. They didn't pick that. It was because it wasn't deep into the gravel. It was only like a...
There were only 3 laps left.
Does that matter?
I kind of understand why they didn't want to bring the safety car out for that. And it's...
You can control that with yours, but if someone's got a puncture or a tyre fails through there,
I know.
It's only 2 yards. Say, if it was up against the fence, then I'd say, okay, fine. Yeah. But it wasn't. It was only just in the ground. Yeah. I don't want safety cars. I don't want to get angry about safety at you race circuits. You're
angry about everything.
I don't want to get angry about it, but I just look at it and think, I'm honest with you, there wasn't an issue, but could there have been a problem had another car gone off there and you've got to say yes?
Yeah, although I brought that issue up earlier in the day when actually one of the minis got pulled to the edge of the gravel trap at the bottom of paddock.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a story for another day. And consequently, three different BMW winners.
Yeah, so
across the weekend.
We're very excited for De Leon, and that is replicated for Rainford, really. You know, he's new into the championship, podium this weekend, qualified well, and then took the race win, which means that for the first time since 2015, WSR have won all three races with three different drivers, which is good for them. But for Rainford, it's another debutant win, adding his name to the rostrum of touring car winners, which is fantastic. So him and De Leon, you know, join those annuals for history. And he didn't put a foot wrong this weekend, Rainford, it has to be said.
No, he was quite exemplary, wasn't he? Mm. Especially with the difficulties that obviously they would have in race two with that harder tyre. He was still the driver of those top three to come out furthest up the field.
And it'd been easy for both him and De Leon, actually, to have their confidence knocked after last weekend, last race weekend, because you come into the touring cars, you're at the pinnacle, you're in a top team, and then it's not very good. And you'd be very easy to lose your nerve and think,
what have I stepped into?
Oh, should I've stayed where I was? You know, all that kind of stuff. And then they've come out of it really well, which means that Rainford won the race from Jake Hill, so BMW 1-2 as well. Tom Ingram, that's 5 podiums out of possible 6.
Yep.
Not bad going for the championship hopefuls. Sutton finished 4th. Again, this is what Sutton does. He drags difficult, performing cars to good scoring positions. It means he retains his lead at the top of the championship as well. Chris Smiley in 5th. Fantastic effort from Chris. Mm-hmm. I think that the Independence is looking really interesting this year. He did finish just in front of Independent rival Josh Cook. Tom Chilton in 7th. Moffat 8th. Robottom 9th. Disappointing to go from pole to 9th, it has to be said, particularly on the soft tyre. Shedden, who I kind of went unnoticed, finished 10th. that caught me out a little bit. Dorlan in 11th, Morgan in 12th, he was on the hard tyre, De Leon on the hard tyre at 13th, Cambridge on the back of the grid did get points into 14th, and Aaron Taylor-Smith finished 15th.
Again, we did notice all 4 Toyotas running together at one point this weekend, in the lowly, if not non-point scoring positions at one point, which is getting difficult. If you're going to have another bad weekend like this, Toyota, then I think you can say goodbye to any hopes of any championship.
Do you know what? I was thinking the exact same thing earlier, and I think it's already done. I think if you look at it, we're 20% of the way through the season already.
Yeah.
Yeah, just check my maths there. Good. And you've basically conceded 6 races already. Mm. You're not going to win anything that way, particularly given how strong the rest of the field are. If we could just take a quick jaunt to penalty corner before we do predictions and all that kind of stuff. A
few this weekend, weren't there?
Yeah, so race 2, Max Hall received an official reprimand, was given a 3-place penalty and 2 penalty points on his licence for causing collision with Dexter Patterson. This penalty also counted as an official strike.
I must say, a 3-place penalty is a little bit pointless when he was already going to be at the back of the grid for race 3.
I agree with you, but I suppose the lawmakers would say that the outcome doesn't make a difference. You have to uphold the penalty regardless of the outcome of the situation. Otherwise, if had they both stayed on track, would they have? They should still give the penalty regardless. Yeah, yeah. So I get it. I know what you're saying, but I also get it as well. I also think that actually that's a little bit over the top. Personally, was it completely dangerous and reckless? No, he made a mistake that had a bit of a consequence.
I think it's reckless in the fact that he just hasn't seen him coming.
Yeah, I've seen worse in touring cars get less. Bye-bye. That's all I'm going to say.
Yep.
I don't think he should have escaped scot-free, but I think it's a little heavy-handed. Adam Moffat was given a verbal warning for overtaking or not slowing down under light flag signals in round 5, so that was in race 2, so that's going to be infringement under the safety car, I'm going to imagine. Nothing for the double incident.
Nope.
And then race 3, Rainford received a formal reprimand for gaining an unfair advantage, whether inversely or not. So it doesn't list who that is against, but it can only really be against Robottom. Yep. But that's what I mean. It's a bit wishy-washy. I mean, you've won the race. You've got no penalty for it. And if you're Robottom, I'd feel a bit aggrieved. And actually, this is where I think that had Robottom finished 2nd, I think they'd have given a 5-second or penalty to reverse the positions. But because he didn't, And this is a bit of a problem in the rules.
Could he then argue that car was broken? Well, that's why I went back through the field.
You know, this is it, isn't it? I think that it's difficult because we are into the ifs, buts and maybes territory. But I do wonder, had Robot finished second, would that penalty have been different? Yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
Right, then we shall get on to our driver awards first of all before we have a quick look at our predictions.
Okie dokie.
So, driver of the weekend, I think we do actually agree this time.
I'm not going to have to go full Gary Neville, no. I'm gone for Rainford.
Yes,
so I will say honourable mention to Hill, took pole, took a win, took a podium, but so Rainford did all of that apart from pole. Well, in his debut season, the bar is a lot higher for Hill in that way.
Yes.
And I think Rainford was exemplary this weekend. Yeah, didn't put a wheel wrong, did he?
And if he can continue that going forward, then we could have possibly a two-way fight for the Jack Sears between De Leon and Rainford.
Absolutely.
Obviously, depending how other drivers and teams get on. Or it could well be a small flash in the pan for BMW being at Brands and being a good track for them in the first place.
I'll get to that in my summation, my final thoughts.
Okay, your villain.
Toyota, they're so poor. They are so poor. And okay, people go, oh, well, they got a top 10 finish. Big whoop.
Yep.
Did Shannon come back for top 10 finishes?
No.
You know, and okay, they've said they were struggling this weekend. They were 6 mile an hour or so down where they wanted to be in the straights. But why? Why? Mm-hmm. We've seen BMW, and okay, you could say flash in the pan, that kind of stuff. We've seen BMW have a poor time at Donington, and they've come back and changed the car.
Flash in the pan. Sorry.
Yeah. It's all intentional. We've seen BMW have a difficult time at Donington, and they've come back the next race and put that right to a degree.
Yep.
If anything, Toyota were worse here than they were at Donington.
Yep.
I look at it, and I think they've had a high driver turnover. They're running four cars. Have they gone a bit too ambitious? I don't know. They've got to sort it out soon, because you're absolutely right. If they want to compete in the manufacturers or in the teams or in the Jack Sears for Pearson, you can write the Drivers' Championship off now. I'll tell you that for nothing. But they could finish bottom of all their championships, which would be really embarrassing for a brand like that.
Yep.
And I just don't understand why it's gone so wrong.
I know.
You?
Toyota.
Yeah. Can you add anything to that?
Coffee and paste. Yeah.
I think the reason I'm so really frustrated is because I had such high hopes, because there was so much hype.
Yes.
Okay, partly from people like us getting excited.
But we've done so much work over the winter and stuff like that.
But we've also brought in Aaron Taylor-Smith, who's in the best form of his life. We've brought a three-time champion in. We've brought a really exciting driver through in Dorlan, who's making waves in the stuff he's written, racing. And Pearson, who's also been a hot talent. And you would... If you told me they hadn't turned up this weekend, I don't think I would have noticed. They were, I'll calm down a bit now.
Surprise good.
So, honourable mention, first and foremost, because I like to do honourable mentions from time to time. Kreese, I thought, had a strong weekend.
Yes,
compared to Brands. But actually, compared to Donington, I'm going Chris Smiley for a good surprise.
Okay.
Are you going for the same?
Yes.
Okay. Really, really seems at home with that Hyundai. Really, really seems to have got to grips with the car. And just seems so comfortable mixing it with the best and the best at the front.
Yeah.
Copy and paste.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Should we go for a full house?
Surprise bad. Honourable mention for Napa.
Okay.
Who obviously certain a little bit the curse of the special livery car.
Yes.
But they really, I think, struggled across the weekend here. I'm not sure they've made as much strides as perhaps Donington suggests they had, but we'll have to see what happens in the next couple of rounds. But I've actually gone for Cook as my surprise. It goes well here normally.
Wow.
It's a circuit that Cook goes quite well at. The Honda's got a good history of going pretty well at the circuit as well. Yep. Messed up qualifying. Didn't really make a lot of progress in race one and two. Okay, he finished decently in race three, but people who would have thought, was Cook going to be in a dark horse this championship on that basis? No.
Would you like to hear mine?
Is it different?
It is.
Excellent.
It's the Cupra.
Yeah.
I really thought coming into this weekend...
Well, it's an L1 tour in the ground.
I really thought coming into this weekend the Cooper was going to be competitive, hence why I went for Paterson for Texas.
Obviously, didn't see
BMW quite doing what they'd done. But he wasn't even there or thereabouts with Jack Sears. I thought the Cooper was quite poor and finished... I'm not sure Cooper scored points this weekend.
I think they did. No, they didn't.
Which is a real shame considering how... competitive they were on the opening weekend as well.
Right.
So, yeah, displeased.
quick run through the predictions then. So it's very simple. Poll winner, 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 Jack Sears. No points scored between the pair of us.
Will knowledge. So we've got good will knowledge.
We're washed. I'm not even going to go through who you predicted. You can catch that on the preview podcast. In terms of your three predictions, you got two. Well, you got one right and one closest. So we'll quickly run through those. Yeah. Virtue to outscore Napa. Yes, I've got Virtue as 89 versus 70.
Yep.
So well done, point there. One of the Jack Sears to win overall by less than 3 points. I've got that as Rainford on 57, De Leon on 52. So no.
Yeah, unfortunate because, yeah. Two wins for Rainford I just didn't have in.
No. And you had Hall to score on all three, which didn't go down particularly well.
Yeah, we'll move on from that one quickly.
And you had 13 overtakes at Druids. It's so difficult to look back on the coverage, but we've basically gone over to the point where you've gone over halfway. And also, we have green, it's more than 13, so yes. You get the closest point for that.
More difficult than I thought it would be to count as well.
Well, it's difficult because the cameras aren't always there either. My predictions, I almost had a clean sweep here. I certainly had a clean sweep in the general. So I had restart to outscore one.
Yep.
I've got restart on 35 and one on 26.
Yep.
So comprehensively. Double to make the quick six.
Yes.
Unequivocally.
Again.
Dilly on podium. This counts as a race win. I'm not having you squirm out of this saying that.
No.
It's got to be a win.
I have nothing to give against that one. That was well deserved.
Perfect. And I had seven overtakes at Georgia, which is wrong. So I've actually only caught up you've a point, which is a bit annoying from my point of view, which I believe makes it
8-4?
6-3. So it's 5-2, wasn't it? Yes. 6-3.
Which is on screen now. So 6-3 overall. And We head off to Snetterton next.
Yes, we'll just give you a quick reminder of how things stand in the championship before we move into our final thoughts for Brands Hatch. So Sutton leads the way on 92, Ingram on 87, Hill on 80, and then a chasm has opened.
It's a significant gap, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, Chilton had a pretty meh weekend and has managed to consolidate fourth, but he's on 55, that's a long way back. What I'd be more concerned about, and I know there's a long way to go in this series, but Camish on 50, that's already 30 points back off third,
and back
42
seventh.
Off winning.
Yeah.
That's it's a big gap already, isn't it?
I'm more surprised that Rowbottom is ahead of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Considering Rowbottom's fairly average weekend. But yeah, it's...
Cook's down 12th on 36, which again, as I say, there's a long way to go. This championship will ebb and flow, but you have to say the top three have really opened an early gap.
I was
going
to say, I do think we have to amend from what we've said, obviously, at the end of the Donington review, in that it's going to be a two-horse race. It's going to be a three-horse race, as long as BMW can keep up this new form that they found.
Absolutely. And the manufacturers, Accelerate lead that on 179 to BMW 160, yep. Napa on 154, Toyota 101.
Yep.
In terms of the teams... Team Virtue lead the way there on 166 from Napa on 143 and LKQ, Eurocar, Parts Racing with WSR, etc. Incorporated, all rights reserved on 99. Just to give you an update on that, Toyota are down in 8th on that with 45.
Ooh.
So the only teams are ahead of is Doble's, which is effectively one car team, Rocket, which is the Hall and Patterson side, and Nick's team. Independent drivers, this is going to be an incredible battle this year, I think. I'm really excited. I'm getting probably a little bit more excited for this.
It's going to be a far closer battle than I thought it would be going into the season.
Me too. So Chris Smiley leads the way at the moment on 107.
Yep.
From Mikey Doble on 93, Josh Cook on 86. I won't go all the way down the list on that one, apart from Lloyd in 7th is a bit surprised. Nick Hamilton's actually ahead of Daniel Lloyd.
What finish races.
Independent teams, Restart lead that by 8 points ahead of Motor Parts Direct of Paramax Racing, then One Motorsport third or 96. That's a surprise.
It is.
A slow start for them. In the Jack Sears, this is going to be an exciting trophy as well. So, De Leon leads the way on 99.
Yep.
Ronan Pearson, who actually, to be fair to him, finished well this weekend and made sure he was...
Finished races.
For the Jack Sears, finished races and finished well in them. He's on 89. Rainford's on 82. And there's a bit of a gap down to Osborne, who's on 63. That one, I'm not too worried about gaps at this stage because that is going to really ebb and flow as the season goes on. And then the big one.
The Wingfoot Award.
Dan Camish leads the way, so maybe he'll get a trophy at the end of it after all. He's on 31. Jake Hill's on 28.
Yes, so you wanted some final thoughts.
Yeah, do you want to go first? Because I'll be a little bit longer, I think.
It was bloody hot this weekend.
And ice cream prices are out of control, by the way. It's a cartel.
I can tell you didn't buy them at Donington. so, yeah, it was... as we kind of thought, a little bit lackluster, especially with the sport races this weekend, which we kind of thought was going to be the case with the reduced package, shall we say.
Had a good look.
Yeah. What I am really hoping for is that we kind of keep this good weather, because I think it's going to throw up some unusual results at Snetterton as well, because we know how hot Snetterton can be, and it's got so many different variations in the whole circuit that certain cars are going to be faster in some places, certain cars will be faster in other places. So I think Snetterton will probably really shuffle as to who we're going to see is going to be the best car of the season.
Okay.
That's what I'm going for.
I'm going to just say that there's been a lot of people upset, moaning, whatever you want to call it, on social media today that BMWs have dominated a weekend and they're going to win the championship and it's all going to be very boring. Everybody calm down.
Do you know what's helped that?
What?
In the programme where it said Hill 2025
championship. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Everybody just calm down. Take a breath with me and calm down. Cast your mind back last year. Turkington won the first two races with ease.
At Brands,
yeah. Yep. Yeah. Different tracks suit different cars. The BMW has always gone well at Brands because it's a high traction circuit with the hills and not the Jake Hills, the actual hills that go up and down. The same driver didn't win all three races. We saw how much the hard tire affected them in race two. And you can say to a degree, a little bit of luck came into play as well this weekend with where, you know, safety cars were and bits and pieces. But
we could have seen Camish win race two.
Exactly.
If it weren't for the failure there.
Adding to that, Ingram second, 5 out of 6 podiums. That Hyundai's no slouch. That is a very quick car. And even if Knapp are having trouble, Sutton still dragged it to 3 good results, including a podium.
Yep.
Calm down. It's going to be all right. If this happens to the next 4 races and BMW win the next, what's 4 times 3? 12 races. I might retract this calm down message and start getting cross. But yeah, nobody was moaning at the end of Donington that Hyundai had dominated that weekend.
Dare I say it, I don't think we had much moaning when Napa did this a couple of seasons. Well,
we had loads. Not the start.
Not from early on.
Not from the start, but as the season went on. Yeah. But yeah, and nobody wants to see dominance, but every track's going to suit different cars in different ways. This weekend was hot at a track that suits a BMW with big tire drop-offs to factor in. It's all right. Also, let's not forget, it's not like you and I have jumped in the car and won a race. De Leon and Rainford and Hill are all very, very good drivers. You know, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right.
I'm not sure I could have dealt with the temperatures in the cockpit this weekend if I was racing.
I do worry slightly that Snetterton's next, which also tends to suit the BMW, so we'll have to see how... but yeah, it's all just calm down. It's going to be all right.
Might rain by then. It's my birthday, so...
I do want it to rain. I've not had a wet Snetterton for ages. I like Snetterton in the wet, but yeah. Let's not go too early on this. Last weekend, including us, we'd all written BMW off, and this weekend they've come back. Yep. The Touring Car Championship always ebbs and flows. Let's not get carried away. Let's just take a breath, and we'll see what happens at Snetterton.
Done?
Yeah. Lovely. It's unlike me to be so positive and calming. Oh. I know. Social media is both brilliant and also, it likes, like me, it loves a bit of hyperbole. Let's not get carried away after 6 races.
Do let us know your thoughts and feelings down in the comments, though, because we'd love to hear what people think.
And I get why people are worried, because we've seen domination from cars in the past. To a degree, Hill dominated last year. Though Ingram sort of took him all the way.
Yep.
If you look at race wins. Obviously, the Napa year got boring very quickly. But, yeah, it's touring cars. It's going to ebb and flow. We're 6 races in. There's a lot of races to go. 24 of them, in fact.
If you haven't done already, go and subscribe. Get the bell on YouTube as well, because you'll get notified every time that we release a video. And we are looking to release more and more videos this year. So keep topped up with that. If you haven't already, go and find out other YouTube series that we've got. We've got driver profiles. We've got the rules for this season. We've got drivers to watch.
We've got a retrospective of Müller and Plato, which I'm going to keep pushing down your throats because I worked hard on it.
Until we see you next time out at Snetterton, we may have a video for you in the meantime.
We've got them banked, haven't we?
Yes, we have. But until then, we'll see you soon and stay safe. All good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you were going to pick stuff up so then I can edit this bit out.
Okay. I was going to step a bit further forward as I realised I was stood.
in my shadow.
Well, I was going to say, in a different postcode, as my famous saying goes. Yep, you can now cut this bit out.